Is Florida State at a crossroads with Mike Norvell? Can he resurrect this program, or has the nail been put in the coffin? Michael, that's what we're going to talk about today, kind of revisiting the things we talked about after the Miami game. There was a lot of people that thought that was an emotional post, or the thing I tweeted out, that was some emotional things said in that video. But now we've had a couple days to let it rest, right? You've had some time to let the dust settle. And I'll be honest, there was a little bit of emotion in how it came out, right? Because you're sitting in Doak Campbell Stadium, you're watching your team not be that competitive against a rival. You know, I had talked about this before, where I've been to 6 FSU games since 2024. We're 1-5 in those games. We're fans, man. Emotions is what you do, right? And so there was a little bit in that, but I've had a few days. We have apparently set social media on fire with some of the things that we said. And so over the last 72 hours, I have fielded about 800 comments. I counted them. And I have responded to probably close to 500. My thumbs are on the injured reserve list. I think they're questionable for the rest of the week to live tweet the game on Saturday. But really what I wanted to do is I wanted to kind of come back to the table in a more calm, controlled environment and just address kind of where Florida State is at with Mike Norvell in his tenure in this new system with the new coaches, and just kind of a real no feelings, mostly evidence, some opinion approach to where we stand. And so that's what we're going to talk about today. It's not meant to be positive or negative. It's just kind of meant to show where we're at. And so that's what we're going to talk about. But before we do that, Michael, thanks for joining me for another episode. And how are you?
I'm good, Jesse. Thanks for having me again. Yeah, I think this is an interesting conversation that we're getting ready to have. And because a lot of the fan base is having this right now, we've seen it on social media. We've seen it on other media outlets there. It's kind of the talking point at this moment of what to make of Mike Norvell in year 6, you know, with Florida State at a 3-2 record, you know, back-to-back losses. And if you watch that game, whether on TV or you were live in person, even if you saw the replay, it was clear for 3 quarters that Miami was way in ahead of you. And so it really brought out the pitchforks, to say the least. And
yeah.
And I know we recorded a video, you know, the day after and said, you know, some things that were concerning to us. And so I'm very interested to get in this conversation after having, you know, a few days to kind of let our emotions chill and to be able to look at it from a mostly objective. There's yeah. always some subjectivity to it.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, what my approach to this was to be as neutral as possible and just let the data speak for itself. And I almost thought about doing this like a court case episode. Like, we'll give you the evidence and you make your decision. But there will be some opinion on top of that too. Now, if you watched that last video, I first want to start with, we are safe. I know it looked like a hostage video, but they did let us go. It was a $60 million ransom, Michael.
But it was.
I told them to forward that over to Tallahassee and they would let us go. So we made it out from that. All kidding aside, that was still at the Airbnb. So we have better internet now and we're back in the studio. So a lot to talk about. But Michael, I think where I really want to start with this, right, is I just want to make a couple things clear in the beginning. First off, we never said that it was time to fire Mike Norvell right now, this instant, right? Because I think the first thing you have to remember is he doesn't call plays. So what difference is it going to make if you fire him right now? There's really no point. You at least should see how the rest of the season plays out. And I think that's the first thing to start. And the second thing that I want to say is, with all those comments, I feel like I have a pretty good finger on the pulse of where a lot of the fan base stands. And I'll tell you what, man, it's like you said, man, it's kind of, there's a big growing part of the fan base that has already checked out on Mike Norvell. There's a lot of support still for him here. And the main objective that I want, or the main thing that I want to say from a personal perspective, is I will always, always support whoever is the head coach at Florida State, because that is what's best for the program. I always want the current coach to succeed, because that is always the best option. It is never the best option to fire a coach and have to pay a bunch of money and go out and find another coach and have uncertainty and you don't know if they're going to work. It is very dangerous to get into the hiring, firing cycles that we saw Miami and Florida do for many, many years. So that, I think, is the first place I want to start, is that I will always support, whether it be Mike Norvell, whether it was Willie Taggart, whether it was Jimbo or Bobby or whoever the coach, I will always support the current coach, right? Because that is what's best for the program, and to avoid that buyout and all that stuff. Now, that doesn't mean I'm backtracking. I still stand on what I said. The results have to be better, period. And that goes for recruiting, that goes for development, and that goes for wins and losses on the field. Those things are all true. But just because we questioned where we're at with Mike Norvell at Florida State doesn't mean that every time Mike Norvell doesn't get a first down or, you know, he looks funny, he gets caught picking his nose on the sideline or something like that, we're going to call for his firing. That's not what the case is. We just want better results because, again, man, like I said before, we are fans of Florida State University, not Mike Norvell State University. It is always what's best for the program, whoever that coach may be. So I just want to start there, and then we're going to get into some numbers and things like that. But, man, that was the very first thing that I wanted to make clear is that we still support the coach, who's ever the coach of the program, because we just want to win, man. We just want to win, and this is a business of winning, and the results have to follow. And right now, as much as Mike Norvell preaches about the standard at Florida State, it's hard to argue that he's meeting that. So, again, it's not to trash Mike Norvell or to call for his firing right now, but it's also not backtracking. It has to be better.
Yeah, listen. I'm always going to support Mike Norvell. Always. End of discussion. I'm going to support Mike Norvell because he is the head coach at Florida State University. And so that's why I support Mike Norvell. I want Mike Norvell to succeed. I want him to win. I want him to win out. I want him to win a national title. I want him to win an ACC championship again. I want him to produce Heisman Trophy. I want him to be successful. I would love it if Mike Norvell retired as a Florida State head coach. Okay. I'm always going to support him. And then when the day comes that Director Alford decides, or whoever the AD is, that Mike Norvell isn't the head coach, then my support immediately moves over to whoever that next head coach is, because it's Florida State is the university I love, the university mm-hmm. that I have loved since I was a little wee bitty kid, right? I'm always going to support whoever the coach is there. And currently right now it's Mike Norvell. I want Mike Norvell to succeed. I want him to be able to get out of this and get Florida State back to the preeminent program that it deserves to be at. But that doesn't mean that there isn't an opportunity to ask questions. And mm-hmm. I think that's where we, especially in this society and our culture, you know, the moment you start asking questions, everyone's assumed that it must be then, okay, it means you need to start firing the people. And I don't believe that. I don't think Mike Norvell should be fired. I made it clear in our previous video, we don't think Mike Norvell should be fired. We never said that at once. We believe that he should get the rest of the season and then an evaluation should happen. Absolutely. I think in any industry, a person should be able to get the full totality of their season, unless they've done something morally, ethically, or characteristically wrong. They should be able to get the full benefit of the season that they've been entitled to figure things out. And Mike Norvell should get that. But that doesn't mean that we can't ask questions. That doesn't mean that mm-hmm. we can't put the standard of what he said up and say, man, it doesn't feel like this is getting there, right? And so that's what I would just say to the fan base. It's like, hey, ask questions, contemplate, debate, you know, very compassionately and thoughtfully and respectfully with each other around the merits of Mike Norvell. But man, let's be careful calling for his job and just baseless accusations and just mean-spirited words. Like, we don't want to be those kinds of fan bases. You know, let's question, but then let's show up. Let's support. And until he's not our coach, he is our coach.
Yeah, I'm gonna give him support until he gives me a reason not to, right? And that's getting fired. I just think what we're saying is everything should be on the table, right? If you ask Mike Norvell tomorrow, do you feel like you're meeting the standard at Florida State? I'm almost positive he could admit it. He could admit that no, he's not right now. And I'm sure he knows that. And I'm sure he wants to do better. But at the end of the day, like we said, man, he's not the seventh highest paying coach in the country for no reason. Like, you have to go out and earn that as well. And like you said, man, that goes for any coach, right? I swag surfed in the stands for Willie Taggart. And then I was sure enough on board for him getting fired when he did. So that's just what I want to say. And so how we're going to do this is I have had a lot of time to think about this. I've taken a lot of opinions from the fan base in our comments. And so I have a lot of notes that I'm just going to kind of read out. And this is just because I have, you know, I have ADHD, so I can't keep anything in my brain longer than about 5 minutes. So I have to purge it out onto paper. So I'm going to read these and then we're going to take breaks throughout the show and just kind of let Michael react to what I'm saying and kind of give his half of the story too. So some of this is going to sound negative, but again, when you talk about facts and numbers and data, there's no emotion in that. The numbers are what they are. It's numbers on paper. That's all it is. That's not me trying to paint in a bad light. That's me telling you the story. And so let's start, Michael. The truth is, right now, when you talk about why we're questioning things in the first place, how did we even get here, right? We're 2-12 versus Power 4 teams since the ACC title game. Three of our five total wins have come against two terrible FCS teams and one of the worst teams in FBS. The Bama win was nice, but it's only going to carry you so far when you haven't beaten a Power 4 team since. Like, you know, Mike Norvell just in his last interview talking about the Bama win and how they weren't good, but now they are. Like, man, I get what you're saying. Read the room, right? You just lost two games in a row. Let's stop talking about week one. Let's focus on the next week ahead. But at the end of the day, man, he's still 7-20 without Jordan Travis at quarterback, and three of those wins were against lower level programs. You're 20-22 in the ACC. You're 1-9 in the last 10 ACC games. We've lost seven straight conference games. You're 10-13 in road games. Again, he preaches the standard, and I just can't see how you can justify that the numbers I just read meet that standard. Now, that doesn't mean he can't get it turned around. That doesn't mean the coaching changes that he made in the offseason can't pay off going forward. It's been five games since they made a lot of changes to this team. Those things still need to flesh out, which is why we need to see the remainder of the schedule play out. Now, we were talking before the show, you know, you have played a pretty decent schedule up front, right? You played a national title contender in Alabama. You played a national title contender in Miami, and you played a Virginia team that is way overachieving to preseason expectations. But we had even talked about after ACC Media Days, that was going to be our surprise team because of the investments they had made in that program in the offseason. But now you got a lot of winnable games in front of you. And so it's time to start winning, right? But at the end of the day, man, I think for me, where I'm at right now, is I'm just done justifying losing. I'm done making excuses for, oh, this could have happened or that could have happened. I'm just tired of hearing the what ifs or the if onlys, right? The what if we had done this or if only we had not done that. That doesn't change the results of games. That doesn't change your win-loss record. And Mike Norvell gets paid for wins and losses. That's why he makes $10 million a year. So that's just kind of where I'm at. And one of the biggest excuses I've heard from a lot of people is, well, we went 2-10 last year. I get it. I hear you. For me, 2-10 is not an excuse because, Michael, who was responsible for 2-10?
Yeah.
Mike Norvell was responsible for 2-10. So I don't see, like, we blame 2-10, but we don't blame the guy responsible for 2-10. And that, to me, is more of an excuse. Also, the other thing is, tying this year's expectations to last year's record is not as apples and oranges as people think it is, because we talked about this 100 times in the preseason. You have seven new coaches and like 18 new starters. This is not the team that went 2-10. This is not last year's team. You should not be like, well, if we win six games, that's great because we went 2-10 last year. This is a different team. This is different coaching staff. A lot of these people had nothing to do. 80% of this team was not responsible for 2-10. So I just don't see how that's an excuse. We see in the modern era how a lot of these teams flip their record from 3-9 to 9-3. I think you should. I think the thing that I said in the preseason was it's basically a different team, so it shouldn't be unrealistic to expect different results. And so, yes, I understand they went 2-10. No, I don't think that's a valid excuse, right? Yes, it's an improvement wherever you end up, as long as it's not 2-10. You've already eclipsed that win total. But at the same time, I think you should not tie your expectations due to last season when there's been that much turnover, right? DJU's not your quarterback anymore. Adam Fuller's not your defensive coordinator anymore. Mike Norvell's not your offensive coordinator anymore. It's a different team. The other thing I want to say is, people say we overreacted to the Bama win, and maybe we did as a fan base, right? But guess what, guys? That's what wins and losses do, right? Look at Pitt last year. They started 7-0. I'm sure they were probably like, wow, I didn't think we'd be this good this year. They lost the last six games of the year. Those things matter. Wins and losses should adjust your expectations. And by the way, it's not illegal to overachieve, you know? We can certainly see that once in a while. And I do think at the same time saying that, people forget that the seat was hot coming into this season. And one good win against Alabama should not change that. One good season could change that. So if Mike Norvell finishes the season 9-3 or 10-2 and they win out, sure, you can turn the heat down on the seat, right? But if he goes 5-7, and oh, well, we beat Alabama, that should not adjust how hot that seat was. One good win doesn't do that. But I will say this, and then I'll kick it back to you for some thoughts, man. I think what the Bama win did, the more I thought about this, the Bama win has essentially become the equivalent of Mike Norvell telling everybody in 2024 that FSU was the biggest, strongest, fastest team he'd had at Florida State. It was something early in the season that set expectations really, really high, and then you've kind of followed that up with disappointing results so far. Now, again, I know you lost to a couple of really good teams there, but, you know, had Mike Norvell not have said that before 2024, we probably wouldn't have been like, how does your best team turn into your worst results? Had you not have beat Bama game one, we probably wouldn't have expected to have beaten Virginia, you know, handily, or to beat Miami at home or something like that when they're coming in as the number three team. But because you did, you kind of set unrealistic expectations for yourself. But again, that is what wins and losses do. When you win a game like Alabama, you should be expected to beat a team like Virginia. You should be expected to be competitive against Miami. Now, again, I think the jury is still out on 2025 because they could win out. They could still meet the expectations that we talked about. But you have to start delivering on results and not riding that win, because you're going to start losing the fan base. And, you know, talking about all the comments that we fielded, I think there is a big part of this fan base that is just checked out. Like, they are just – Mike Norvell has to win out for them to have any faith. There's a big part that's like, you know, I'm done. There's a lot that still support him, and that's us included. But, you know, one of the things that does concern me going forward, where we're at on a two-game losing streak, is that Mike Norvell historically, since he's been at Florida State, has struggled to stop the bleeding when things go out. You know, 2021 – an overtime loss turned into an 0-4 start. In 2022, you had an 0-3 stretch in there. In 2024, well, that speaks for itself. Now in 2025, you're on a two-game losing streak. Can he stop the bleeding? Will it turn into three games? Will you be able to bounce back? And that's just kind of where I'm at, looking at this season so far, man. And we're going to – there's a lot more on that. But I just think that, like, the expectations were kicked up with the Alabama game, and then you kind of followed it with disappointing results. But can you stop the bleeding and rebound this season before it comes off the rails and before people just check out on you completely?
Yeah. You know, as I was listening to you, the thought that came to mind is, I think of like a parent or parents who had a kid, and let's say the kid was a B-minus student in school. Okay. So you're coming into the school year, you know, let's say last year he had a D plus year of school, just not very good. And 2 years before that, he had an A plus year. And the year before that, he had an A minus year. But the year before that, he had a C minus year. And the year before that, he had a D minus year, right? So he's been around that C minus kind of kid. So you're coming into the year and you're thinking, okay, man, like this has to be a C plus year for my kid to make it to the next thing, right? And your kid goes out, and on his first test, he gets an A plus. I mean, just A plus. Now, it's one grade over a cumulative effect over the whole year, but he gets an A plus. And so now as a parent, you start thinking, well, now he's going to bring home A pluses every game or every test, right? And then he has a couple easy tests, and it's A++. And you're like, oh my gosh, here it comes. And then the first test where he gets challenged again, let's say it's a C-. And you're like, no, let's say it's a D-, because that's a loss. You're like, I didn't really like that. And then another test, a harder test, and he comes home with a D-. And you're like, whoa, what is happening? And now you're ready to discipline the kid and everything. And the thing is, in some ways, you forgot. This is a C-plus kid. He has always been a C-plus kid. Now, the reason I use that analogy is because that's what I feel like I'm guilty of, right? We knew what Mike Norvell was coming into the season with. We predicted that an 8-4 season was the kind of season he needed to have to move forward. We felt like this roster was at least an 8-4 roster, right? We said the ceiling probably wasn't much higher than that, maybe 9 wins, but it had to be at least 8 wins and no lower than 6, right? That's what we said. We had those 4 losses chalked up as Alabama, Miami, Clemson, and UF. That's what we had that chalked up to, right? We said man, if you can get to that Miami week at worst, you know, 2-1, right? With two wins over SES programs, a loss over that. I'm sorry, 3-1 with a win over Virginia, two wins over the FCS program and Kent State, and then a loss to Bama. You know what? Then okay. Like, you know, we're seeing a little bit of progress. Well, guess what? You got to Bama. Or I'm sorry, you got to Miami 3-1. But what you did is you exchanged a phenomenal win with a with a minor win, right? You replaced the Bama loss with a Bama win and a Virginia win with a Virginia loss. So we arrived exactly where we thought we would be. Now, I don't know about you, Jesse. If I remember correctly, you thought that Miami was probably the one of the four that we could upset in that. Mm-hmm. I didn't. I assumed that Miami was a loss. So we are exactly where I thought we would be coming out of Miami. We're 3-2, right? I thought the big win would be Virginia, not Bama, right? But we got a Bama win, and we lost to Virginia, and we lost to Miami. And so at the end of the day, Florida State has arrived exactly where we predicted this summer for them to be. Now, what you are saying, though, is what is called a cumulative effect, right?
Mm-hmm.
We're not just looking at Florida State this season and this season alone. So when somebody gives the excuse of, well, I mean, they went 2-10 last season. Well, that works. That excuse works both ways, right? 2-10 is not a good excuse because it's 2-10. To go 2-10 at a program like Florida State, I mean, in the old days, you'd be fired completely.
For sure.
Before the buyouts were ever really a thing, right? You'd be fired. But also, you cannot use 2-10 as a, if you're going to judge this season on this season alone, you cannot use 2-10. This is a completely different season, completely different team, almost completely different coaching staff. You know, the correlation between the two seasons is Mike Norvell, really, and a few other staff members, completely different. So that 2-10 excuse goes both ways. At the end of the day, to me, Jesse, this is a cumulative effect. You're looking at the totality of Mike Norvell's career here at Florida State.
Mm-hmm.
He's had five full seasons and a quarter so far this season. And at the end of this season, you have to put the totality of that together and say, is this the standard? And do we feel like we're getting close to that standard if it's not? And if it's not the standard and you don't feel like you're getting closer to that standard, then I think that's where you have the hard conversation.
No, I get what you're saying, man. I just feel like at some point you can't keep failing tests, right? And the thing that I come back to also is there's so many people that say, oh, well, what about 2023, right? Well, he produced 2023. And there's a lot of people that say, well, the assistants needed to be changed. And we said that too. That's fair. We had to get rid of those assistants because they were responsible for 2024. Well, guess what? They were also partly responsible for 2023. Credit and blame has to go both ways, right? You can't blame the assistants for 2024, but also give Mike Norvell all the credit for 2023. So I think there's that too, right? So 2023 is only going to get you so much credit when 80% of that staff is no longer here anymore. So that is one thing too. And also I will say three of his biggest wins were in games that he had 8 months to prepare for, right? LSU, LSU, Bama. So like you have to be more consistent in the 11 other games that you have to play. Now, the one thing I want to say about this year is everyone says that this is why I say results matter, right? So much. This is why it makes such a big difference to me. Everybody says that we're so much better than last year. And I 1000% agree with you. I'm not going to argue against that in most aspects. But let's be real. 5 games into last year, we were 1-4 with one Power 4 win. This year, we're 3-2 with one Power 4 win. Now, we hadn't played an FCS team 5 games into last year. If you moved Charleston Southern to where East Texas A&M is or was this year, we'd have 2 wins. If you replace an 11-win Memphis team last year with Kent State, there's a pretty good chance that we have 3 wins at this point. So we would essentially be 3-2 with one Power 4 win if you rearrange the schedule to match what you had this year. The difference is you have been a lot more competitive against better teams. So I will give you that. You fight harder, you look better, but the results aren't that much different when you really stop and think about it. You still only have one Power 4 win. You still have the same number of FCS wins you had last year, and you beat a much, much worse G5 team. Like, I don't know if you Memphis beat Arkansas this year. You know, again, I know they just fired their coach and everything, but that is miles from what we saw against Kent, or the team that you saw against Kent State. You know, and also you could argue, you know, Georgia Tech, you lost on a walk-off field goal. Virginia, you lost in double overtime. So, like, how BC was started 5-1, the team that you lost to last year. Guess what? UVA is 5-1 this year. So it's just the results are not a whole lot different. Now, you look better in the results that you have. I will definitely give you that. But again, man, they don't hand out trophies for playing hard and keeping it close. So you have to find a way to get over the records. And people are talking about how we set offensive records in those two games and you know, look at how much better the offense looks. Man, setting records against East Texas A&M and the worst power or the worst team in FBS, Kent State, doesn't do you any good when you've scored 3 points at the end of three quarters against a real defense against Miami. That's why I always say I don't care about those types of games, right? And one of the biggest things I've heard people talk about, especially with the Miami thing, and I think you bring up a good point about it being a cumulative effect, right? People are like, oh, well, you're just being emotional because we lost to a rival. No, man, people are forgetting that we also lost to Virginia, right? Had you not a loss to Virginia, I could stomach a loss to a top three Miami team. It's because you've lost now 2 games in a row and you've kind of looked bad doing it in those 2 games. You have not looked like a great team. But when you talk about the Miami loss, everyone turns and says, okay, well, it's NIL. You don't have the money that Miami has. That's fair. I understand that. We don't have a $4 million quarterback. We probably don't have money to pay a $4 million quarterback. So I get that. We're also losing the teams we outspend, right? That is the thing that I keep coming back to. Like, some of this is just coaching and decision-making. Some of this is on the players. I know they're not coaching them to go out there and fumble and you know, throw picks and do all that stuff. But you can miss me with the Mike Norvell doesn't have resources to win at Florida State, right? NIL started in 2021. Since that time, since in the NIL era, you've beat Alabama, you beat LSU twice, you beat Miami 3 times, you beat Clemson, you beat Florida twice, but you've also lost to Boston College, Georgia Tech, Memphis, UVA, Jacksonville freaking State. We're 1-2 against Wake Forest. We're 0-2 against NC State. That makes it hard to blame NIL when you're beating the Alabamas, when you're beating Miami's before now. So maybe Miami didn't spend as much this year or in the past under Diaz as they have under Cristobal. But, man, look at the facility upgrades Florida State is making. Look at Mike Norvell's salary. Look at what they're paying these coordinators, multi-million dollar coordinators you have here. Florida State might not be rich, but they sure enough aren't broke. And so I don't think NIL can just be the like throw it out there excuse, like, well, if you just gave them enough to win, you got enough to beat Wake Forest, you got enough to beat some of these teams that you're outspending massively. And so I do think the NIL argument is valid against a team like Miami, but I also think that the argument that Florida State doesn't have resources to win is crazy talk, because Florida State does. And I want to say this, I do think the more that I sit back and think about it, I do think there have been some moves that may be unnecessary in NIL that maybe we've just not been smart with the money that we're spending, right? You chose to pay DJU $900,000 as a quarterback. Maybe that wasn't a good move. Everybody, you know, we tried to justify that you could win with DJU. It didn't work out. Maybe that's just the thing. You chose to bring Roydell back and bring in Salchuk with 5 running backs already on the roster. Now, I know you had already brought Roydell in, and maybe you just wanted to do him a solid, but he had already been injured, and he really wasn't that great in 2024. So you brought back an injury-prone running back that wasn't that good for you last year. He's got 7 carries for 14 yards, averaging 2 yards a carry. Do we need 9 running backs on the roster, or should we have 4 running backs, 5 running backs on the roster, and you use that money to go get a elite level running back, right? You brought in Gavin Blackwell, who wasn't any good at North Carolina and only had one year of eligibility left. Michael, he has not played a single snap this entire season at Florida State. That is a waste of NIL dollars. What about Elijah Moore? What about LaWayne McCoy? I know he was injured early, but he was not injured when you signed Blackwell. What about all these? B.J. Gibson just left to go play baseball, which was a smart move because he couldn't get on the field to play football. So, like, you're telling me that Gavin Blackwell, who hasn't played for you, is better than any one of those guys? Man, I don't – how many blue-chip receivers have we signed that have done absolutely nothing here? So I think it's just one of those – Sean Murphy last year, Durajaye last year, Bringing Duke Cooper back, Devontae Brown from Miami, Grady Kelly. There's just been so many unnecessary additions because the lack of recruiting and development at a high school level made you feel like you had to go out and get these guys. Man, I understand that not every piece you bring in is going to hit. I understand that some of these are going to be depth guys because you have to build depth. But transfers are, in a sense, easier to evaluate. So if you're missing on some of these guys, man, I think the problem that I have twofold, right, is one, you're spending NIL money unnecessarily on guys that maybe you don't need to bring in. You're also risking running off your high school recruits for guys who are more experienced in the portal, but maybe they're not a whole lot better, right? How many times Ryan Williams, freshman all-star receiver, Malachi Toney at Miami, freshman all-star receiver, our freshmen can't even get on the field. Javon Boggs is like the first one in forever that started at Florida State. So why is that? And why are we continuing to bring in a lot of these pieces that just don't feel necessary, like the Blackwell kid? I think if you would whittle down to maybe we don't bring in 20 transfers and we actually play some of our high school guys, then that not only helps your NIL dollars go further, that also helps your high school recruiting, because one of the best parts of this year is you being able to see all these young players getting playing time on the field, because you can sell that on the trail.
Right.
Before this year, man, that had to be a tough sell to say, hey, come commit to Florida State, come play for us, come sit behind some transfers for the next 3 years, and hopefully you'll get some playing time, right? That I think it's hard. I mean, right now, Michael, we have 19 defensive backs on the roster. We have 8 tight ends on the roster, and you've given them 16 out of 85 targets, and 11 of those were to Randy Pittman. You probably don't need half those tight ends, if we're being honest. You have 9 running backs on the roster. So, again, I don't think it's that you can't afford to be competitive. I just think maybe it's if you would stop being so reliant on the portal and stop being so heavy in the portal and actually play and develop your high school recruits, then you could afford to maybe pay for 2 or 3 bigger transfers. Look at Miami again. Carson Beck, a big high-dollar transfer. A couple of other guys that they got, the secondary, 4 or 5 big transfers. But most of the other guys are high school recruits. Now, you have to pay them too. I'm not dumb. I understand that. But, man, I think some of it is like maybe we don't need to bring – you run 23 transfers this year, right? At what point do we start playing the high school guys? And to that point, and I'll throw it back to you on this, some of the people, I understand why you brought in 23 this year, because new systems, you need new players. And a lot of people are saying, well, these coordinators, they don't have their guys yet. Well, first off, if you say you don't have the talent, that's an indictment on Mike Norvell, because these are his players. These are his recruits. This is who he got on the roster 6 years into the tenure. If you say you don't have talent to compete, that's an indictment on him. But when you bring in 23 transfers and 23 high school recruits of this staff's choosing, that's all their guys. Maybe they don't have the complete basket of what they need, but you should have enough out of 46 guys. You should have enough to go beat a team like Virginia. And then we'll get into some recruiting in a minute, but I'll throw it back to you on that, man. I just think maybe we should do more by way of playing our high school recruits and stop spending so much money for unnecessary additions in the portal. So maybe instead of spending money on 3 tight ends and 2 receivers that you're never going to use, you could pile that money into 1 Keon Coleman every single season at whatever position you need it at.
Yeah. I think it's a sickler cycle. It's 2 C's. That's really hard to say. It's sickler cycle, because here's the problem. You have this innate desire to win, right? You feel the pressure to win, but then you also feel the pressure to recruit better, right? But the problem is that when you're recruiting, let's say you're recruiting high end talent, which, we can't necessarily say about most of Mike Norvell's recruiting classes here, but let's say you're recruiting high end talent. In college football, it's rare that you find a freshman that is ready to play right now, that is ready to can go on the field, that can contribute right now. It's, when I say rare, I don't mean like it's never possible. It's just you don't see it often. You don't see the Jeremiah Smith Austin. You don't see, the Jameis Winston, who was honestly a redshirt, freshman when he played first year. So he already had a year in the season there. There are very few freshmen that come in that are immediately like, oh, you have to, a Jadeveon Clowney, that you have to play them right now. And so with that, there's the pressure then of, okay, so what do we do? And especially in this transfer portal era, the problem has been a misinvestment in where the transfer portal money has gone. And so what I wrote down is this: when you're recruiting, your money, high school, number one at the top of your list that you should reserve a massive chunk of your recruiting budget money for is, we talked about this all the time, O-line, D-line. That's how you build a program. If you want to look at why Miami looks so much better than Florida State in that game, start right there. Mario Cristobal, he's been there 4 years now, okay? And the first 2 years, he took butt whoopings. But that man was determined to build that offensive line and that defensive line through high school recruiting, not portaling, because you don't find, you know, in the first couple iterations of the portal, you could find really good offensive linemen. You could find really good defensive linemen. Not anymore. These guys are homegrown. These are guys that you brought in from the high school ranks, you develop. So your high school budget recruiting should mostly go to offensive line, defensive line. Then I think the next thing is quarterback, because you got to have an anchor man. You got to have a trigger guy. Then linebacker, then running back, then defensive back, wide receiver, tight end, right? In the portal, it should be opposite. It should be exact opposite. In the portal, you should be going after skill more than trench, because you're going to find better skill that is developed and produced in the portal. So
more affordable.
Wide receiver, defensive back, tight end, linebacker, quarterback, running back, O-line, DL should be the last thing you're considering in the portal. That's the way it should look from the NIL perspective. So when you look at Florida State's roster, you're seeing, like you said, an abundance of tight ends. I don't know why we have that many tight ends. I don't know why we have a astronomical amount of DBs. I don't know why we have an astronomical amount of running backs, when really we should have an astronomical amount of offensive linemen. We should have an astronomical amount of defensive linemen. Everything else should be relative to what they need. And I get it, depth and practice and, you know, all the NCAA new numbers and all that stuff. I get that. But really, your money should be focused on those areas. And so it's just this cyclical cycle of like, well, I got to win, so I got to go in the portal and get these things now. I got to find an offensive line. I got to find a defensive line. I got to find a quarterback. I got to find that. Well, I hate to compare us to Miami. This is so terrible. But look at Miami. I mean, they, again, homegrown offensive and defensive line, mostly homegrown linebackers. Then they went out and they got a quarterback to fit their system that they could do what they needed to do. And look at them now. And so this is what Florida State did in 2023. It's what you saw, right? They went out and got complementary pieces. Yes, they got Jared Verse, they got Brandon Fisk, but that they got him in 2022. But they were building on that because they had multiple years with those guys. Where they have struggled is, and why we're in this situation, is because of the abdication of the defensive and offensive line through high school recruiting.
Yeah, and Fisk we did get in 23, but I get what you're saying.
That's right.
Yeah. Well, and the other problem is with the offensive line is you have 18 offensive line on the roster, right? But then when Michael Pettis gets hurt, you don't have a single offensive tackle that you feel okay with putting in the game. Mm-hmm. I think that's a problem too. And like you said, I hate comparing us to Miami, but here's the thing. When you talk about recruiting, first off, would Mike Norvell be here if the portal didn't exist? No chance, right? Mm-hmm. The portal did exist. And I give him a lot of credit for being an early adopter of the portal, right? But now you're not the only one using the portal. So it's getting harder to get prospects. So you need to shift to high school recruiting. And the thing is, like you talked about with Mario early in his tenure, man, he took it on the chin in the win-loss record, but he was like, man, I'm just going to stay with my process. I'm going to recruit. These guys will eventually be ready. And now you're seeing the fruits of that recruiting. That program right now looks more stable because you can predict the future based on what you have on the roster. Whereas us, you can't predict the future because you don't know what you're going to have from year to year because you keep running back to the portal. And I understand they have more NIL to spend on the recruiting, so that's how they win some of them battles. I understand that. You just got to be able to recruit in the state of Florida, man. That's it, period. Like, he's just a better recruiter than Mike Norvell, NIL or not.
Well, he's more aggressive.
Yeah, exactly. And, like, he signed two top 10 classes with a losing record. And there's – you know what I'm saying? So, like, you have to be able to recruit, period. And then the other thing I will give him credit for was, man, he was not scared to fire coaches who didn't get the job done. They've had three defensive coordinators and two offensive coordinators and plenty of position coach changes. I know I picked on them because they said they had the dream staff the first year they got there, and they fired them all after 1 year. The thing is, how many busts, when you talk about the offensive line, How many busts did Alex Atkins have? How many blue chip offensive linemen did we have that have been absolutely nothing for you? Mm-hmm. He should have been fired a long time ago. And so that's the thing with Mike Norvell is like, it has to be better from a recruiting standpoint. And you also have to be willing to make changes when changes are due, not when your job's on the line. That is the other thing that I will say. Now, I'm not saying you can't use the portal. Almost every team not named Clemson does, right? And I give him props for being an early adopter, but you shouldn't be building your foundation from it 5 years later. You should have had enough high school recruiting to where you're just supplementing, not building your foundation out of that. And that's kind of what we're seeing right now. And as you mentioned, man, I had in my notes here to say that the one place you can't rely on the portal consistently is the trenches. It has to be through high school recruiting. And there's also the fact of if you're so portal reliant, your culture also shifts from year to year. It's better to have guys who come up through the program, who committed to that program, not just because they either want to jump on a moving train or they want to check. You need guys who have come up through the program. And the trenches, again, everybody needs offensive linemen. Every team in the country needs offensive linemen. So if you go to the portal to get a plug-and-play starter, it's going to be harder to find, and it's going to be more expensive. And when you look, this is something I talked about even in the last episode, back to the trouble in the trenches, where we say the one critique I give against Mike Norvell and Florida State, and this goes back to Willie as well, but Miami and them and teams like Georgia and Ohio State and Miami, they build their teams from the inside out. They start with the trenches. That's how Georgia wins two national championships with a walk-on quarterback. That's how Miami sustains success with Carson Beck, who's maybe good but not great, right? Because they have dominant trench play. Mm-hmm. Florida State always seems to be the opposite. We have a lot of really good skill players, but the offensive line has always struggled. And so you have, right, man, you just have to look at that, right? But I will say this, man, when we talk about the talent acquisition, I think Florida State has enough to win, right? But it's not all just talent. Like, you have to be able to get the most out of that talent. I mean, you're sitting here right now. I know you probably played one of the tougher ACC schedules, but you're sitting at the bottom with UNC and Boston College. And it's just got to be better, man. And the thing with Mike Norvell, which is so mind-boggling, right, is against using the 247 talent composite against teams that you had less talent than. Teams that you had less talent, he's 10-9. Against teams that you have had more talent, he's 19-14. And if you take out 2023, that's 9-14.
Yeah.
So it's like, man, at some point you have got to start beating talent or teams that you have a talent edge on. And so that's just kind of where I'm at with Mike Norvell. Yes, you can argue the talent side of things. Yes, you can argue the NIL side of things. But you have the resources to win at Florida State. You have the talent to beat the Wake Forests, to beat the NC States, to beat the Boston Colleges, to not lose to Jacksonville State.
Yeah.
You know, people were talking, someone said the other day, well, we had a quarterback situation that was unsteady, which is why we lost to Jacksonville State. If we had just rolled, who made that decision? That was Mike Norvell. And so what I'm trying to say here is I don't think Mike Norvell is a bad coach. But I think he's losing games that he should not be losing. He's losing the teams that you outspend. He's losing the teams that you have more talent than. You have got to find a way to get over that hump. It's almost like he's the inverse of James Franklin. Like, I don't know if we can mend them together into one coach. Like, Mike Norvell has no problem winning the big game, but then he loses a lot of games he's supposed to win. James Franklin can't win the big game to save his life, but he wins 90% of the games that he should win. Yeah. But, you know, to kind of round it out, man, well, like you said, the goal was 8-4 for this season, and that is still within reach. So is 10-2. So is 9-3. Now, I'm not confident we're going to go 10-2, but I still think you could hit the goal that we set. Now, granted, that is not where we should be in year six.
Yeah.
But we said it had to be 8-4, and it had to be an 8-4 that looked good. No blowout losses, no embarrassing losses. And so far, I would say that's kind of where you're at, right? Miami, you could consider fringe embarrassing because you were out of that game in the fourth quarter, but you did fight back and you made it respectable. And then you needed to see progress in recruiting. And so far, I'd say they've done that. Tribe 26 is currently sitting at 13th. They did fight back against Miami. Again, the UVA loss was in double overtime. So you've kind of checked that box, right? But I think the point is now, man, you got to get your crap together and get back to winning. Point blank, period, right? Like, I'm not against keeping Mike Norvell, but this was your mulligan. Last year was your mulligan. This was your one chance to reset the staff and bring in a bunch of new players and try and go for round two. But the bar has got to be higher going forward. You can't be expecting 8 wins in year 7 and hoping that's going to work. Because, man, again, like, you look at next year, you got at Bama, at Miami, at Louisville, at Pitt, at BC. That you should win that game. Home versus Clemson, home versus Notre Dame, home versus NC State, home versus SMU, Virginia, Florida, and then Central Arkansas. That schedule ain't doing you no favors next year. Yeah. So the bar has to be moved up going forward. But that also means you need to produce the rest of the year. You cannot go out and lay an egg the rest of this year. I think for me, man, I'm just tired of hearing about the what ifs or the hypothetical situations or the could have beens that led to better results or blaming 2-10, but not the coach responsible for 2-10. I'm just tired of justifying losing. This is a results-based business, and at the end of the day, results have to matter. You know, Florida State pushed out Bobby at the end of his tenure for a couple of 7-win seasons. You fired Willie in 21 games for lack of results. Mike should be no different than anybody else. He should be held to the same standard that every other coach here has been held to. And so, you know, man, like I said, when we said in the preseason, the Bama game was probably the most important game of his tenure, because if you went out and got blown out, I think you lose all faith that this can get fixed. But he nailed it. He passed that test. Like you said, he started with an A+. Not only did that keep the Wolves at bay, it sent them back into the den. They're hiding right now.
Yeah.
But then, you know, we said if you lost, you could not lose to UVA if you lost to Alabama, because you had Miami waiting on the other side and you couldn't be 2-3 with 0 Power 4 wins. That was a really bad place to be. So we also said that for every loss you take in that early span, those first 5 games, now we counted you had 2 automatic wins and you got those, the pressure to perform was only going to increase. And so right now, because of what you've done in the last 2 games, I almost think I know this sounds crazy, but I almost think it would have been better to lose to Bama and beat Virginia, because the pressure has turned up because you took kind of a bad loss. Mm-hmm. So now I think where you're at, man, is you didn't go 2-3. You're 3-2, but you still only have 1 Power 4 win. So it's kind of still the same thing. To me, the pressure is now immense. I feel like the Pitt game is a fork in the road for the season, for the staff, and for this program. If you lose at home to Pitt, a 3-2 Pitt to fall to 500 and 0-3 in the ACC, man, I just don't know. That's going to be really tough to recover from. And I'll say this, and then I'll throw it back to you for some just final thoughts here, because this is about the end of it. But at the end of the day, man, I want Mike and the staff to succeed, period. I only want what's best for the program. I don't necessarily say to fire him right now. Again, he doesn't call plays. It ain't going to change anything for you anyway. I don't want to have to pay that buyout, because it would set the program way back, right? But at the end of the day, man, if you were to – and you'd have to pay some money to get a big fish in here, right? But people would kick that door down for that job. Mike did give us 2023, and I give him a lot of credit for that. Mike has been one of the most unlucky coaches in the history of all coaches since he's been at Florida State. You had the COVID year. You had the campus shooting incident that cut spring short. Jordan got injured. You got the snub. The man cannot catch a freaking break, and I will give him credit for that. But people also cannot forget – he also gave us the first FCS loss in program history, the first loss to Duke in program history, the worst bowl loss in NCAA history. In 2022, you lost to every ranked team, and 7 of the 10 wins were against teams with a losing record, including an FCS team. And he gave us 2-10. What I'm trying to say is it has looked better this year. You've been more competitive against better teams. You've got some nice young players that are getting a lot of experience. And I do think the culture has flipped. The level of effort has improved greatly from last year. The staff does appear to be a better staff, and they have made progress in recruiting. They did pull some nice flips on signing day. They are fringe top 10 on a class right now. That can be stuff you can build on going forward. I really like some of the pieces you have. Keep in mind, you also do have to replace your entire offensive line next year, probably your quarterback, probably some key pieces on that defense. Deuce could go pro, you know, things like that. You got a lot to replace. And we have seen Mike produce great results when he has elite talent. I mean, most coaches can do that. But at the end of the day, the results have to follow. That's not an indictment on Mike as a person. I think he's a great guy. I love that he does things right. You don't see a lot of off the field stuff. The Seminole Scholar Program is great. I really do think he loves and cares about this university from a personal level. But man, we don't pay him for that stuff. It's part of the job, right? But you pay him for results. And so results have to matter. And so at the end of the day, man, I think you better win the next 3 games. You got Pitt at home. You got Stanford on the road, and you got Wake coming off a bye. If they're not 6-2 going to into Clemson, I think we really need to consider what we're doing at, you know, maybe with that staff at the end of the season. Now, I think they can do it. I think they can. I think you got a lot of beatable teams on the other side of that schedule. You're going to be favored in every game besides probably Clemson and Florida. But, man, you got to start producing results on the field. That's what really matters, is the wins and losses. So I take the emotion out of it, right? It's not about how I feel about him as a person. It's not about the fact that we just saw them lose to Miami. It's about when you grade it on a 5.5-year tenure, it's not been up to the standard that he preaches. And so can you rebound and extend the rest of the season and go 8-4, 9-3, build that class into next year, and then go up against that schedule next year that's going to be tough and get 10 wins? If you can't do that, it's time to move on. I don't think it's time to move on yet. I'm just saying all your cards should be on the table. And the pressure to finish this season on a high note is more than it probably was now coming into the season, because now that you've lost a couple of games, man, if you lose to Pitt, you are in trouble.
Yeah, I think, yeah, as a closing thought to this, you know, you can't argue with what you're saying. The stats are there. They back themselves up, you know, right? As the kids would say, the receipts are, you know, there's the receipts, right?
And yeah. So you're looking at that. CVS receipt, matter of fact.
The Steve, yeah.
It's like, yeah, not that it's long.
But at the end of the day, the receipts are receipts. I think you have to just decide, you know, like, is this working or is it not working? Like, are we seeing momentum towards Florida State being back with the elite programs in the country? Is Florida State making the necessary improvements to be in the national title consideration, to be a college football playoff consideration, to be in the ACC championship conversation? And I think that the jury is still out on a few of those goals. I don't think national title, I don't think any of that, but can they still make the playoff? There's still a chance. If they went out the rest of their games, they at least, you know, have a at large chance to get in. They would need chaos to happen in the ACC for them to get to the ACC championship, but it's not out of the realm of possibility. The focus, what it should be right now for Mike Norvell, is we got Pitt and we've got to win. We've got to win. We got to beat Pitt. Pitt was one of the wins. We said, that's a part of your 8 wins. That's what you got to be focused on. And then once you do that, then whatever's next, Stanford, you got to go to Palo Alto, beautiful area in California. Go there and win. And then you get a bye. And then you play Wake. You get Wake and then the bye. And then if you win the next 3, you're at 6-2. That's the goal, 6-2. Well, the goal really is 1-0 this weekend, but really 6-2. And then another mile marker in the season, meaning another opportunity to gauge where this program is at, is when they go to Death Valley to face Clemson, right? So the goal is to win this weekend, win the next one, get to 6-2 before the bye, before you see Clemson. That's and then from there, we can judge Mike Norvell and this program at the end of the season to determine whether or not he should get a 7th season, right? That's how it should be. At the end of the season, does he get a 7th season? And based on the outcome of what this season looks like, okay? And we also just have to be real, Jesse. There is a $60 million buyout, right? And that matters. Yep. It ain't my money, but it's somebody's money.
Yeah.
And yep, if the university ain't got it, they ain't got it. And so
yeah,
it might be – he might go 3-7 the rest of the way. And guess what? If they ain't got the money, they ain't got the money. He's going to be back again. So I think that's just a major part of that as well, too.
Yeah, I think you're right, man. I think at the end of the day, half the reason, and I hate to say it like this, but half the reason Mike Norvell's here because he can't afford to fire him. I mean, maybe you can, but it's going to put you so far behind if you have to. That's why we're cheering for Mike Norvell to win, because right, it's going to put you so far in the hole, because we talk about a $60 million buyout. Well, guess what? Another coach doesn't come cheap, and another new staff doesn't come cheap, because I don't think you can go out and hire another G5 coach. That's not going to move the needle for the fan base. You would have to go poach a proven coach, and I'm not here to have the Jimbo conversation right now, but my thing is, I'm not saying that Mike Norvell can't turn it around. I'm not saying that this new staff doesn't deserve the chance to turn it around.
Right.
I'm just saying that, like, right now, the results have to matter, and the results are not good enough. That's what I'm saying in a nutshell. And so you have to – the pressure is on the rest of the season to perform. And at the end of the day, when the clock hits 0 on the season – I think all the cards should be on the table, and you should really start weighing what you're doing going forward. Because again, if you struggle to win throughout the rest of the season, guess what's not going to happen? You're not going to sign that top 10 class that right. you should be signing in the state of Florida. Right. And so it's only going to make it harder. So man, at the end of the day, like I will always support the staff as long as they're employed at Florida State. But for me personally, I am done making excuses for losing. Mike, you have had 6 years to build this roster, to get the right staff, to do all these things. It is time to win. I can excuse the loss to number three Miami. I can excuse maybe a double overtime win to Virginia, maybe, like if you're in a rebuilding year. But daggone it, the rest of the season, you better perform. You better be 6-2 going into Clemson. You better win 8 games this year. I don't have the $60 million to donate, but I think at some point you have to really consider the TV aspect of your games aren't going to be primetime. The butts in the seats, the donations, and all those things are going to add up over time. And so I think you really have to figure out what you're doing. But that doesn't mean we're going to stop supporting them. It right. just means it's two fingers to our eyes, two fingers to you, Mike. You better get it right. Because results got to matter, man. At the right. end of the day, results have to matter. And so that's right. going to be it, man. I just wanted to bring some quick thoughts, just kind of clean up that last episode that we did Sunday after the game. That was kind of a raw reaction, still raw emotion. I know we slept on it. It was only about 4 hours. So, but I just wanted to kind of just clean up on that, man. It's just, it's not meeting the standard. And that doesn't mean that he can't. It just means right. that he's not. And so you got to get back to meeting that standard. If you're apologizing to the fan base after losses, that's not meeting the standard. And so nope. let's go win some games, man. And that all starts Saturday with Pitt. And we're going to have a Pitt preview for you guys coming up. So make sure you check that out. As always, Michael, check out Alumni Hall, the sponsor of this episode. Get you some awesome FSU gear. Save 10% with Coach Spear. Drop a like and subscribe. I'm sorry if this was not what you wanted to hear, but we just got to have the tough conversations, man. I just feel like that's where we're at. And so that's going to do it for this one, guys. We will catch you on the next one. As always, go Noles. Thank you.